Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Many world leaders are in Washington for President Obama's fourth and final nuclear security summit. An effort to secure nuclear material from terror groups and others with malicious intent. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said Wednesday the Obama administration is pleased with last year's nuclear deal with Iran as a way to control the spread of nuclear material.
What's also true is that since the president initiated this series of nuclear security summits, 13 countries plus Taiwan have eliminated their stockpile of highly enriched uranium. That is a tangible example of the progress that we have made.
The biennial event Thursday and Friday is to include delegations from more than 50 nations who will discuss evolving nuclear threats and ways to prevent them. The head of the UN-mediated Libyan unity government arrived in Tripoli by ship Wednesday in a bid to set up a temporary seat of power despite efforts to block its entry by air. Fayez Sarraj, the new government's prime minister, arrived at a naval base under heavy security from Tunisia. He said his government has already begun the difficult task of rebuilding the war-torn nation, unifying the central bank and national oil corporation, as well as put in place policies to ease the suffering of the Libyan people. Western nations view the unity government as the best hope for ending years of chaos and uniting multiple factions within the North African country, but it has not received the support of rival administrations in the East and West. The United States Wednesday called on so-called obstructionists in Libya to make way for the new government and its important work. This is VOA News. Syria's President Bashar al-Assad told a Russian news agency Wednesday the Geneva peace talks should result in a government that includes both opposition representatives and officials loyal to the regime. However, the Syrian opposition rejected that, saying there's no political future that includes Mr. Assad. The White House called Mr. Assad's view a non-starter. Stephen O'Brien, the UN humanitarian chief, told the Security Council Wednesday that since January, aid workers have reached nearly 400,000 Syrians and besieged in hard-to-reach areas, but continued safe access is urgently needed to reach many more.
Humanitarian conditions remain dire throughout the country, with some 13.5 million people remaining in need across the country. And we are still facing daily obstacles to reach those who need our help the most.
So far this year, he said, only about 30% of those in besieged areas have been reached, while less than 10% of those in hard-to-reach areas have received any aid. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met with a delegation of Nigerian officials Wednesday for a day-long round of talks to discuss, among other things, the African country's issues with terrorist groups. Kerry acknowledged the challenges Nigeria has experienced with Boko Haram and repeated U.S. support for the government.
Under President Buhari, Nigeria has been taking the fight to Boko Haram, and it has reduced Boko Haram's capacity to launch full-scale attacks. However, the group still remains a threat, a serious threat to the entire region.
Nigeria's defense minister said the military had reclaimed much of the land once occupied by Boko Haram and that it would be able to push the terror group out of the Sambisa forest within 2 to 3 months. A suspected would-be suicide bomber detained Friday in Cameroon is said not to be the one of more than 200 Nigerian schoolgirls abducted from Chibok in northern Borno State 2 years ago. The non-governmental Murtala Mohammed Foundation helped verify the young girl's identity, a big claim she was indeed one of the kidnapped girls taken by Boko Haram. The Nigerian government says the 12-year-old was abducted in Bama a year ago when the village was overrun. The UN says it's investigating extremely troubling new allegations of sexual exploitation and abuse by peacekeepers in Central African Republic. The incidents occurred between 2013 and 2015 in Kemo Prefecture involving UN and non-UN personnel. The UN Security Council Wednesday rejected a call to reduce the peacekeeping force in Democratic Republic of Congo. It extended the 20,000-strong MONUSCO force for another year. Kinshasa had called for halving the force. The council called for elections to be held on schedule in November. Brazil's President Dilma Rousseff has lashed out at those trying to impeach her Wednesday, saying they're trying to carry out a coup to oust her. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. promises continued support to Nigeria's fight against Boko Haram.
It is an outrage that any group anywhere would brainwash young people to strap explosives to their bodies and walk into an open marketplace with the intent of murdering. That is what Boko Haram does. And that is why these terrorists have to be stopped.
That's U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry speaking Wednesday in Washington. Zambia's former interim president enters into a partnership with the opposition ahead of August presidential election. Zimbabweans resort to selling their livestock to ease hunger. And South Sudan's rebel leader says he's ready to finally return home.
The most important thing once I arrive in Juba is to ensure that the security situation becomes normal. The war which is being fought against our troops by the government in Equatoria and in Bahr Ghazal should cease immediately.
Riek Machar is South Sudan's first vice president-designate and rebel leader. Ugandan police stopped Kampala city mayor from accessing his office, and Ugandan filmmaker turns out low-budget action movies. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the threat posed by Boko Haram must not be allowed to shape Nigeria's future. Speaking Wednesday in Washington during a meeting of the U.S.-Nigeria Bi-National Commission, Kerry said the U.S. will continue to help the Nigerian government until Boko Haram is finally defeated.
It is an outrage that any group anywhere would brainwash young people, including little girls, to strap explosives to their bodies and walk into an open marketplace with the intent of murdering their own families, neighbors, and themselves. That is what Boko Haram does. And that is why these terrorists have to be stopped, and why the United States of America and President Obama are deeply committed to help Nigeria in this struggle. In the recent months, our governments have been collaborating on new ways to institute security measures, including counter-IED equipment, improved information sharing, and training and equipping two infantry battalions.
Secretary Kerry said while military action is required to protect civilians from Boko Haram terrorists, the long-term solution requires effective governance and the creation of jobs that, he said, give young people a stake in the future of their country. But he said one of the stubborn obstacles is persistent corruption.
You cannot have impunity in your culture, in anybody's culture, and expect to be able to make progress. The truth is, and I've seen this as Secretary of State, and it's been an eye-opener for me, the numbers of countries in the world that are challenged today by corruption, where it is stealing the future from young people, stealing the future from all citizens. What happened in Tunisia with a fruit vendor who set himself on fire was not the result of religious indoctrination. It was a result of an individual who rebelled against an individual act of corruption by a policeman and who said, I've had enough. So all of us need to heed the warning signs. And we emphasize that, as in the United States, the soliciting of a bribe at any level of government cannot be considered business as usual. It is a crime. To fight it, the United States strongly supports the efforts of institutions like Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission to prosecute corruption cases. And we back the role of civil society and of the media in exposing corruption.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, Nigeria's Foreign Minister Jeffrey Onyema thanked the United States for its continued support in the areas of governance and the fight against Boko Haram. He said while successive Nigerian governments have failed the people, President Muhammadu Buhari, with his unimpeachable integrity, is determined to deliver prosperity to Nigerians. South Sudan's first vice president-designate and rebel leader says he is ready to return home. Riek Machar says once he is in Juba, his first priority will be to silence the guns in Equatoria and western Bahr Ghazal. Machar says the international community should help the transitional government of national unity by providing food to South Sudanese who are on the verge of starvation across the country.
The most important thing once I arrive in Juba is to ensure that the security situation becomes normal. The war which is being fought against our troops by the government in Equatoria and in Bahr Ghazal should cease immediately, because it would be very upset for such activities to continue. Once this is over, we turn our heads and our minds to the economy. Meanwhile, ensuring that all the troops are put in cantonment all over the country.
That sounds like a plan, but the ordinary men and women on the streets of Juba are thinking about what they will eat tomorrow.
Sure. I know that there are lots of expectations, John. People need food. We should ask the humanitarian agencies to help us stabilize the country by providing humanitarian food while we are handling the other issues. Once they have preparations to cultivate, things would be normal.
People have been asking me that since you normally speak to Dr. Riek Machar, can you ask him to tell us when he will return to Juba?
Since 2 days ago, the security elements are being flown to Juba. Thanks for the Troika, that's the US, UK, and Norway. They'll be flying 1,370, less than the number which is specified in the agreement. But I have said that number is sufficient for me to go to Juba. Once they have finalized the transportation of these security forces, I will go.
You're going to Juba at a time when the government has not paid its employees for almost 5 months. Do you have money to pay people who are going to be guarding you?
Well, among them are 502 police, Joint Integrated Police. So they will join with their brothers from the other side so that they take over the security of Juba. And the sooner we bring the rest from our bases in Equatoria in Bahr Ghazal and they join up, the security of Juba will be now be handed over to them. I'm aware that the government has not paid salaries for the period which you said, but with peace coming, those who want South Sudan to rise again will assist.
Riek Machar is South Sudan's first vice president designate and leader of the former rebels of the SPLM-E opposition. He was speaking to John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Zambia's former vice president and also former interim president has declared his support for opposition presidential candidate Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, the UPND, in the country's upcoming August 11 presidential election. Guy Scott accused incumbent President Edgar Lungu of allowing the ruling Patriotic Front Party to be colonized by the Movement for Multi-Party Democracy, MMD, of former President Rupia Banda. Lungu narrowly defeated Hichilema in the January 2015 presidential by-election brought about by the death of then-President Michael Sata. Scott says he's not leaving the ruling PF party. Instead, he said he's only entering into a partnership with the UPND for the August election.
We said that we would be working together. And the likely implication of that is that we would support their presidential candidate. But there's still details to be worked out. But the situation was becoming so polarized that we felt obliged to try to introduce some subtlety, if you like, into the politics of Zambia. And that's what we did.
Does this mean that you are leaving the Patriotic Front Party, of which you were once president?
I was once interim president of the Patriotic Front Party, yes. And, I mean, there's no reason to leave a party and no reason to make a hullabaloo about joining one. We only need labels when we go for elections.
You have been quoted as saying that the Patriotic Front Party has been colonized by the MMD. What do you mean?
The previous government, which we defeated, the government of the MMD with President Banda, we defeated it in 2011. What's happened since then, Michael Sata died, of course, and the MMD came to us and said, we want to help you win this by-election, this unexpected election. And we said, that's fine. But since that time, the MMD has been getting stronger. People like me have been squeezed into a corner. I mean, I've been pushed to the backbench. And in fact, I've even had my constituency taken away from me without any consultation or anything. So it feels like being colonized by the MMD. And I say it is colonization by the MMD. So in order to send a very strong signal and to provide ourselves with alternative ways out, we agreed to get up on the platform together with UFNL and say, yes, we're going to work together. That's basically what's happened.
I spoke on my program with the Secretary General of the Episcopal Conference, and he talked about the level of violence in Zambia at the moment. How would you describe that, and who do you think is to be blamed for that violence?
I would say, really, the only people who can stop the violence are the government. The churches are giving it a go, and of course they have a lot of moral influence on the government and on the parties who would be government. But the only people who can really slacken the violence, you know, politics is always bound to be a bit rough and tumble. I mean, you can't keep people who like a bit of rough and tumble out of it. But there's a big difference, a huge difference between people punching each other or slapping each other or tearing each other's shirts or whatever, and people graduating to knifing each other and then from there to shooting each other. And I'm afraid things have got very much sort of out of hand towards the high end. And of course, that's completely undermining democracy. I mean, how do you run a democracy when intimidation is the main technique of campaigning?
Back to your support for the UPND party, could it be said that perhaps you are angry with the ruling Patriotic Front party or with President Lungu, for which you are doing that?
Well, I mean, I think anger is an emotion. I think I don't work too much on emotions. I figure these things out. My reasons for my disaffection with the PF quite clear. I've taken my time. I haven't just pushed them into government and then said, OK, you've got 3 more days or something. I've had a whole year and 2 months for us to reach a common view of life, and we haven't managed to do it.
That was former Zambian interim president Guy Scott. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, March 31st. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. The re-elected mayor of Uganda's capital, Kampala, says he will not be deterred from returning to his office when renovation is completed after officials of the Kampala's capital city authority prevented his team from going to clean up the office ahead of his official installation. Erias Lukwago tells reporter Peter Clotty it is regrettable that an illegal for officials of the Kampala Capital City Authority to seek to undermine the will of the people.
I thought this time round, after I emerged successful, there would be no any other hindrance along the way. But to my surprise, yesterday I sent a team of staff from my office to go and open up my office, yes. And without any problem, without any hassle. So the office was open, they entered, and it was agreed that in the course of next week, we shall conduct a verification exercise to get an inventory of all the property there is inside and prepare it for renovation or painting or refurbishment. And then I re-enter. Surprisingly, today we hear a different statement being issued by some officials from KCCA.
Some people are suggesting that since the spokesperson of the KCCA, Peter Kaouju, said that unless they hear from the court, which had ruled that the status quo should remain, they are not opening the offices. So why don't you go to the court, seek the court to direct them to open it, and then there will be no roadblocks on your way?
You know, it's really amazing that a person of Kaouju's caliber, who is just a mere spokesperson, can delve into matters of law and to engage in an argument with the Lord Mayor of the capital city. That tells volumes about the state of affairs in the country, the status of rule of law in the country, that he has no respect for the office of the Lord Mayor. He has no respect for the person of Lukwago, the Lord Mayor, who was duly elected by the people of Kampala. So there's no need for me to go back to courts of law. They are no legal fetters whatsoever. And indeed, I won in a high court. Justice Lydia Mugambe delivered a ruling to the effect that there was no impeachment, that I should resume my duties. The Attorney General indicated that we were going to appeal. Up to now, they have never appealed. And the interim order issued by Tagmaut for that particular purpose.
If you don't follow the direction the KCC officials are saying, in this case, going to the court for the court to issue an order for your folks to access the office, clean it up for you to begin your term, don't you think it will be acrimonious and will prevent you from doing the job that you were voted to do, just like in your previous term?
Come on, just advise me on this. Which order is that? Which instruction is that from Ewan Kawuju, a mere spokesperson of the institution? We cannot condone this kind of impunity in this country. We can't condone it. But a mere spokesperson can issue directives to the Lord Mayor. Honestly, isn't that a breakdown of institutional governance in this country, rule of law?
Erias Lukwago is the re-elected mayor of Uganda's capital, Kampala. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from Kampala. Severe ongoing drought in southern Africa has already left 14 million people without enough to eat, according to the UN World Food Programme, and the number of food insecure people is expected to grow in the coming months. Some families in Zimbabwe have begun to sell their livestock to buy food because their crops have failed. Sebastian Mofu visited one of the most affected districts in the southeast of the country, near the border with Mozambique, and has this report.
Here at Chachacha village in southeast Zimbabwe, men force their cattle to get into a truck to go to a market. Drought brought by particularly severe El Nino weather patterns has left millions across Zimbabwe and southern Africa without enough to eat. The UN Food Programme says the current rain season has been the driest in 35 years. Johannes Jivongoze says he's selling his cattle because he cannot afford to feed them. Low rainfall has reduced grazing land. He says we've already used up all of last year's harvest, so we have resorted to selling our livestock to get money to buy food. Locals say government assistance has been slow to arrive. The UN's Food and Agriculture Organization has been supplying herders in Chipinge District with feed at reduced prices to help them fatten their cattle. Some farmers in Chipinge are busy planting, although the Zimbabwe Meteorological Services Department announced last week that this already shortened season will end in mid-April. Taringana Makiwa is with the state-owned Agricultural Extension Service, which offers advice to Zimbabweans on farming.
We would rather encourage farmers to go for the small grains, especially the finger millet, pure millet, and the sorghum. Why? Because they are a bit tolerant in terms of drought. Most of our farmers, they used to go for the maize crop. In terms of cultivation, it's easy compared to the small grains. But at the end of the day, in terms of yield, we really reap nothing.
But Zimbabweans continue to prefer maize. It is used to make a popular thick porridge called sadza, made of cornmeal and served with relish. Most households eat sadza twice a day at lunch and dinner. The price of cornmeal has already risen in local markets due to shortages. Sebastian Mofu, VOA News, Chipinge, Zimbabwe.
You probably know Hollywood, and you may have heard of Africa's biggest movie producer, Nollywood, in Nigeria. Now we bring you the story of Wakaliwood, a film studio in a slum outside Kampala, where a Ugandan filmmaker dubbed Africa's Quentin Tarantino has been churning out action-packed hits that are getting an international audience online. So Gino Roosblad reports for VOA from the set of the current production.
These are scenes from Who Killed Captain Alex, released in 2010. The trailer went viral online, and since then, the fan base for Wakaliwood's low-budget films has only grown in Uganda and abroad. The movies are packed with kung fu battles, gunfights, and suspense. But director Isaac Nabwana says, for all the explosions, his movies are also about real life.
There are so many stories, like Who Killed Captain Alex is depicting a picture of, you know, the ghetto life, where we see, you know, taking marijuana or something like that, and then they become hostile and the government chases them, something like that.
The actors rehearsed the studio's current production, Ugandan Expendables. Isaac started Wakaliwood in 2005, inspired by Chinese-American film star Bruce Lee and American TV series like Hawaii Five-O. His wife was skeptical of his dream at first.
It needs a lot of money, and we don't have that money. So where will we get that? And he said, I want to do action movies. And I said, oh my goodness, action movies? You're crazy. Where will we get the real guns?
The solution has been to make what they need from scrap, like this crane. Walika Wood has produced 40 films, all written and directed by Isaac.
We make everything as a team. We sit, and we say, okay, here is the script. Now, what are we going to do? Okay, we exchange ideas. And if we need, like, a house in the movie, so someone, do you have a house? Yeah, I can provide. Some, who has a car? Oh, me, I can borrow. Okay, we do it like that.
And the stunts are performed by the actors.
Yeah, in fact, it is difficult because it has some pains. Because, you know, action movies, we normally do something which is next to reality. So if it means to fall, fall down. If it means to kick or to be kicked or punch.
Serginho Rosblad for VOA News, Kampala.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. In a pulsating all-Egyptian encounter, Smuha edged Zamalek by 3-2 in quarterfinal action at the Africa Men's Volleyball Club Championships in Cairo, Egypt, on Tuesday night. Tunisia's Esperance beat Egypt's El Ahly 3-0, Libya's Sweli dismissed Cameroon's FAP 3-1, and Egypt's El Geish outclassed the Democratic Republic of Congo's SPR in three straight sets. Today, Thursday, in semifinal action, Esperance face Smuha as Sweli engage El Geish. In Olympic news, Egypt, Kenya, Colombia, and hosts Puerto Rico play a round-robin qualifier for the women's volleyball event at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics, the World Volleyball Governing Body revealed in Lausanne, Switzerland on Wednesday. According to the draws, only the winner of the three-day event starting on the 20th of May in the Puerto Rican capital San Juan qualifies for the Olympics. Similarly, in a men's volleyball qualifier, Algeria, Tunisia, Chile and hosts Mexico are set to play a round-robin contest. The winner of the three-day showdown in Mexico City from the 4th of July will advance to the Olympics. In gymnastics, Egypt bagged 17 gold, 10 silver, and 8 bronze medals to top the medal table at the Africa Gymnastics Championships in the Algerian capital, Algiers. Algeria were runners-up with 13 gold, 6 silver, and 7 bronze medals, while South Africa placed third with 4 gold, 13 silver, and 8 bronze medals. Tunisia placed fourth, followed by Morocco, Senegal, and the Republic of Congo in that order. Turning to football, Samba, a Black Panther, is the mascot for the 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Gabon. The mascot was unveiled in the presence of the Confederation of African Football President Issa Hayatou, Gabon's head of state Ali Bongo Ondimba, and FIFA President Gianni Infantino just prior to the kickoff in a match between Gabon and Sierra Leone in the Gabonese city of Franceville last Friday. Finally, in cycling, homeboy Nassim Saidi triumphed in the Algiers International Cycling Rally in the Algerian capital Algiers on Monday. Spain's Rubio Jesus was runner-up ahead of Eritrea's Debretsion Aron. The competition was the last of 10 events in the month-long Grand Cycling Tour of Algeria. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that's it for this Thursday, March 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a good day.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.
Hi, I'm Susan Yawkey of VOA's International Edition. VOA's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of some of the world's greatest experts on international issues. But you don't have to tune in at broadcast time. Listen when you want. Just go to voanews.com. Click the Programs tab and scroll down to International Edition. Scroll down to International.